The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Chairs No Waiting, episode number 314. Eleanor Donahue and Neil Brower, 2005, part two. Back at Mayberry Days. All right, folks, Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the fine folks over at Weaver's Department Store. Drop by over at Weaver's and pick up some of the wonderful Mayberry items they have there. If you can't find it anywhere else, I bet Weaver's got it. And even if you can find it somewhere else, buy it from Weaver's because they support all these Mayberry events. Weaversdepartmentstore.com. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners like you. And this week, our podcast is brought to you by our Patreon patrons. I appreciate that. So far, I have two patrons at Patreon. So if you'd like to be a patron at Patreon, you can go over there and do that. Right now, I've got two. And they show up there. You can donate to me to help keep the podcast running. Folks, it is great to have you. I, by the way, am Alan Newsom, your host for Two Chairs No Waiting. It's great to have you with me here in Mayberry. It is every week. And if you can donate in Patreon, that's awesome. If you want to donate one time and become a executive producer of the podcast, you can do that as well. All the information is at twochairsnowaiting.com. And you'll be able to donate and keep the show on the road. Keep things running. We're, 314 episodes in. I think I figured out the other day that it cost me about $11 an episode to keep the show on the air each year. So $11 an episode. So that's what my goal is over at Patreon. And if you go there, you can donate and you can give per episode. So that way you don't get charged for anything unless I actually produce a show. So this week, I want to thank Neil and Pat Coleman because they were the ones that provided us these interviews. Now, if you didn't see last week's episode with Eleanor Donahue, I want to encourage you to go back and watch episode number 313. It was Eleanor Donahue, Neil Brower, 2005, part one. Now, these interviews, there's going to be three of them total, three episodes of the podcast where Neil was interviewing Eleanor as part of his Professor Brower series that he puts on at Mayberry Days every year. And this one was from 2005. So, you know, I couldn't remember what she had said. So hopefully you didn't either. And you're enjoying this. It's a very interesting interview that now this week we're going to get to hear her talk a little bit more about when she started on Father Knows Best, that she got married, had a baby, joined the cast of the Andy Griffith Show, some of that kind of stuff. So that's what we've got to look forward to. It's a long episode. We got about 30 minutes of the interview, so let me quit talking and let you head on over to see the interview with Neil Brower and Eleanor Donahue from Mayberry Days 2005.
In 1954, this was Lillian Messinger that you were talking about. Yes. She called you. You were 16 years old. And she told you that she had set up an interview for a new show that was beginning called Father Knows Best.
That's correct.
What do you remember about the interview with Robert Young's partner, Eugene Rodney? That's who you talked to.
Well, I had just washed my hair. And she called me on the phone. She said, you've got to get up to Sunset Boulevard right away. Well, of course, we had no car. I had to take a bus. And it was hard to get from where we were to Sunset Boulevard because you had to take buses that went all around Robin Hood's barn. And so I said, I can't. I just washed my hair and it's all frizzy and terrible looking. She said, I don't care. Get there. So I went out and I hitchhiked up to Sunset Boulevard because it was the most direct route with my hair all fuzzed out to here. In those days, my hair was real, real, real curly. And I read for him. And after I read for Gene Rodney, Miss Messenger followed up, called him, "How do you like my girl?" And he said, "Oh, she's very cute, she's very sweet, and she read fine, but she's much too young. She's not my Betty." So Miss Messenger pestered Mr. Rodney for a couple of weeks. Finally, he agreed, just to get her off his back, to interview me again. This time, she took me to her hairdresser. She had me coiffed. She took and she bought me an outfit. She bought me a waist cincher and some little high heels and some stockings. And she drove me up there in her Jaguar, I think it was, Jaguar sedan, just like a lady. And I remember we went up there. And her husband came around, opened the door for me like a chauffeur, and I stepped out. And I went in and I read again, the same scene. So she calls up later, she follows up, and he says, "Well, she's, you know, read fine, but she's much too sophisticated. She's just too much the starlet, too Hollywood. No, she's not my Betty." So she commences to pester him some more, and she pestered him and pestered him. The secretary was so annoyed by Miss Messenger that she finally put Mr. Rodney back on the phone one day after several weeks, and the part still hadn't been cast. And he said, "Miss Messenger, if I agree to test your girl, will you leave me alone?" And she said, "Why, yes, Mr. Rodney." And I went in and I tested, and that's all she wrote.
Now, the series was shot at Columbia Studios in Hollywood. It was a network series. It premiered on October 3rd, 1954 on CBS, and it was shown at 10 p.m. on Sunday nights. It then was moved to the NBC network for the 1956 through the 1958 seasons. Then CBS picked it back up, 1958 through 1960, when the show ended. And it was also being shown on reruns. I thought this was interesting. The reruns aired in prime time, 1960 through 1962 on ABC. So we're going to get to the Andy Griffith Show in a minute. But when you were on Andy in 1960, 61 season, you were also being seen in reruns of Father Knows Best on ABC. So you were on two shows that aired in prime time.
Yeah, and the first bits of them weren't even reruns because we had shot enough shows to complete an entire season, because the seasons now were getting shorter. The producers were producing fewer shows per year. We used to shoot, 47 episodes a year.
And in the six-year run of Father Knows Best, there were 195 episodes.
Yeah, oh, good. Now, I thought I've said that, and it seems kind of unbelievable.
Yeah. But yeah. Why did you describe yourself in your cookbook as a pill on the set? P-I-L-L. You said, I was a pill on the set.
Didn't I say that?
Yes, you did.
Well, I guess I must have been.
You were referring to, and I'm sorry, I don't know the Father Knows Best show very well, the actor who played Bud and Kathy.
Yeah.
It's kind of teaming together and going against you, and you were a pill on the set, you
said. We used to gang up on each other, but it was sort of like a real family in that there would always be two against one. You know, sometimes if you have multi-children, you'll know what I'm talking about. But it would never be the same two against the same one. But frequently it felt to me that it was Lauren and Billy against me. Billy was a Dickens. We're very, very, very good friends, but he loved to rag on me. And I was very sensitive to it. Quite, you know. I was very mature, I thought.
Now, while on the Father Knows Best set, you were encouraged by the school teacher, Miss Lillian Barkley, to attend classes at UCLA.
Yes.
And you did that. You also grew up quick on that show, outside of the set. You got married and eloped on May 5th, 1956, to a sound man on the show. Mm-hmm. And then a year later, your son Brian was born on March 30th, 1957. Yeah. Now, what was the on-set reaction, and if you'd like to share it, your mother's reaction to your marriage and your pregnancy?
Well, you can imagine. Can you not? My marriage was precipitated by the fact that Mother never liked anyone. I mean, when I dated, no one ever did she like. And I was 19, and I began to get a little panicky about the whole thing. And I was so immature I had not had any experience with real life. If you can, you know, go back over everything that you've heard. I've been in make-believe land all of my life. So I have no experience whatsoever of anything. I decided that the first person that asked me to marry them was the person that I was going to marry. And there was a fellow that I actually favored, and he was in the Navy, and he didn't write me a letter that week. And Dick Smith took me to a movie and whispered to me that he'd like to marry me, and I said, okay. And in my head, I thought, well, people go away to college and they have roommates, so it must be the same thing. I really did. I thought, well, you just, you know, you live with somebody else instead of you live with your mother. And then I can learn how to cook, and I can learn how to do things, and like a real person, and I can learn how to make a bed. Because mother never taught me how to do anything. All I did, my job was to do my job, my acting work. Didn't know how to do anything. And I was really eager to get on with life and learn how to do stuff and have a baby. And I thought, well, you know, this is how you do it. So I did. And we left on a Saturday to go to Las Vegas. And Dick called my mother on the phone. I was chicken. I think I knew what the reaction was going to be. And So we had the reaction we expected, and I went to the set on Monday morning, and of course, Robert Young thought that I had gotten married because I was pregnant, because that was the usual thing, that, you know, when somebody got married in a real quick hurry, that was why, because everyone was standing at the door waiting for me. He was so sweet, what a wonderful man, put his arm around me, and he said, oh honey, are you all right? Why didn't you tell me? And I went, oh, I'm fine. I'm fine. I had a big smile on my face. I was quite happy. I mean, I was very contented, except for the fact that my mother was upset. And they at the studio said, just, Mrs. Donahue is not allowed on the set for now until we get this all, you know, squared away, because it would have been unhappy. Anyway, so that's how that all came about. And couple months later, I became pregnant, and I was so happy because I thought that would, and then I would grow up.
See, and they had to shoot you in creative ways, not to
shove me behind chairs and with sweaters and coats over my arm, and I never got very big. I stayed small, and so I was able to work until 6 weeks before he was born, and I was back at work 5 weeks after.
And in 1959, you were nominated for an Emmy for Best Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The show continued until February of 1960, and I want to read a quote from your book. In February of 1960, there was a writer's strike in Hollywood, and we, you were talking about yourself and the other cast members, were forced to stop work on Father Knows Best until it was settled. When the strike was over, the cast got word that the show would resume filming. Robert Young, however, refused to continue. He was tired, the scripts were tired, and the three kid actors had begun to look like three grown-ups. Now, February 15th, there was a writer's strike. This is how it affected you. On the Danny Thomas Show on February 15th, 1960, Andy Griffith was introduced to America through the network in an episode called Danny Meets Andy Griffith. The show was immediately picked up by General Foods. There was a commitment made to it, and pre-production began for the Andy Griffith Show. In the summer of 1960, you were contacted, and you went to Sheldon Leonard's office one hot afternoon with your son Brian, and eventually signed to a 3-year contract to appear in the Andy Griffith Show. And a few weeks after the meeting, production of that show began. What do you remember about that meeting on that hot afternoon with Sheldon Leonard?
What I remember of it is listening out into the office to make sure that Brian was behaving himself because he was out in the outer office playing with the secretary. He was such a good boy. He was a wonderful, wonderful baby. But I could hear him giggling and hear her talking to him. And so I wasn't really listening. I was nodding and doing a lot of to Sheldon Leonard. really not paying any attention at all. And when the meeting ended, I smiled and thanked them, and I left and collected my little boy and went home. So I was terribly surprised to find out that I had been cast and that they wanted me for this new show. And I really hadn't paid any attention at all to what it was I was supposed to be doing.
Production began in October. You would have been 23 years old. Mm-hmm. 23. The first episode you appeared in is Ellie Comes to Town. It was first broadcast on October 24th, 1960. It's the fourth episode of the series. And we're going to see the opening scene when you first step onto the streets of Mayberry in the clip coming.
Barney, you wait on out here if you will, and as soon as Aunt Bee gets everything she wants, why, you can take her on home, all right? Nice morning, ain't it? I don't believe it's gonna rain.
Oh, it's closed.
Well, what do you know about that? Here it is after 9 o'clock and Fred ain't open yet. He must be having another spell of sickness. Well. Come on in, Aunt Bee.
What did they do with my list?
Ah,
here it is.
Well, good morning, madam. I didn't see you come in. You're the first customer we had this morning. Is there something particular I can do for you?
Yes, you can get me some toilet water.
You figuring on going off on a date? We got all manner of goodies over here. Let's see. I wished you'd look at that pretty box. Ain't that pretty? Parfum, Nage, Des Floris, Ain't Rouge. Made in Paris, France. Whew. I was over there one time during the war. It's a real nice smelling country. Do smell good.
Mm-mm. Well, now let's see. We could use something for Opie's sniffles. Officer! Quick, burglars!
Where?
Quickly, in the drugstore.
All right.
Please hurry. All right. Can't you use the passenger side?
Can't now, ma'am.
Oh, there.
All right, mister. I got your right handle down. Just stick him out. Andy, it's you.
Well, of course it is. Who'd you think it was, Billy the Kid?
What is the matter with you?
Well, she said that... Ma'am, this ain't no burglar. This is Sheriff Taylor. This is Aunt Bee. You almost had me shoot my own sheriff, for heaven's sake.
Then what are they doing in this store before it's opened?
Oh, well, Fred was a little late this morning, and keys up over the door, and I did... I don't believe I know you.
I'm Ellie Walker, but I still don't see what you're...
Fred's niece. Howdy-do. He told us about your coming to help out.
Oh, and it's nice of you, too, with Fred ailing and everything. Barney, you heard about the new lady druggist coming. Well, this here's her.
Howdy, Doc. Or whatever it is you call yourself.
Well, just call her a lady druggist, Barney. And if they're all as pretty as she is, we could show you a lot more of them, couldn't we?
I still don't know what you're doing in this store before it's open.
Oh, well, I reckon I know the store about as good as Fred does, so I always help myself even when he's here. Yeah, let's see. Toting this stuff up is 3 and 2, and carry 2 is 3:23.
Sheriff, what are you doing?
Why, I'm paying my bill here.
If you please. There you are, and thank you.
Well, it was very nice meeting you, Miss Walker.
Yeah, it was nice. Be sure and call me anytime you see a thief. Only make sure it ain't the sheriff.
Thank you very much, and come again.
You all go ahead. I'll be there in a minute.
Did you feel like that this was kind of ahead of its time to be cast as a pharmacist?
No, I really didn't. For some reason or other, it seemed quite natural, really. I don't know why it should have, except that all my life I'd lived in a kind of fantasy land, so maybe that was part of my fantasy. But
did you have any input into the character at all, the development of the character?
No. I was a hiree. I just did what I was told.
We're not going to see any more episode clips that show Frances Bobbier to any degree. What was your impression of Frances? We saw her in this opening.
I was just crazy about her. She was awfully sweet to me. And she was very, very fond of my little boy, Brian, whom I bring to the set, sometimes on rehearsal days only. And she would talk about needlework and recipes. And she was just a sweetheart and a wonderful, wonderful actress. So warm and quick and bright and just delight. Just a delight.
Do you have any memories about that first week of shooting that first script? Anything that stands out in your mind?
No, my whole time on the show, I pretty much felt, especially in the beginning, I was terribly, terribly missing the Father Knows Best group. I think because we never had a true ending. You know, in most series, when they come to an end, you have a big party and you say goodbye and you wish each other luck, and that's, you know, there's a closure, they call it. We never had any closure. It was like, it's over, and I never saw anyone again. And I had been with them for so long and felt like such a family unit. And I felt so alone, naked. And it was a kind of funny feeling, and I'm amazed. Also, I didn't feel that I was doing what anybody really wanted me to do. I didn't feel that I was doing it well or well enough. I was terribly anxious the whole time. And so I don't have much memories of happy times on the set and visits with this and what somebody said funny. You know, I was always in a fritz. And
after Andy stays in the drugstore, after Barney and Aunt Bee leave, Ellie's gone to the back room, and Andy steps back to speak to her alone for the first time. Ken, let's see the second clip from Ellie Comes to Town.
Yes?
So, you're Fred's niece, are you? Fresh out of college, too, I see.
That's right.
17.
Excuse me.
Well, I just thought I might be able to help you a little bit, this being your first day and all, kind of help you find out where things are.
You're very kind, but I'll manage.
Well, now, that's nice. Your diploma right under Fred's. Eleanor Walker, Ph.G. Pharmacy gal? You must be proud of the prize heifer.
Sheriff Taylor, I don't want to be rude, but you do understand, if I'm going to help run this store, I've got to establish some sort of system.
Oh, well, of course you do. Of course you do. Same thing in the sheriffing business. Got to keep things orderly, know where things are all the time. Wouldn't do to arrest a prisoner and then forget where you put him. Well, now, that's a nice smile. Just as toothy. Expect folks will take to that. Well, if I can't help you, I reckon I'll go on. I'll see you again, I reckon. Bye.
Goodbye.
I want to share with you Jack Ellison's comment about Andy calling Ellie Lady Druggist. Jack says, Andy, in addressing Ellie as Lady Druggist, goes right along with the fact that in 1960, not too many women had jobs like that. Hence, Andy's confusion as to what T should call her. This was the first Lady Druggist Andy had ever seen. So that's where we get Lady Druggist. Now, I know that you enjoyed working with Ron Howard.
Oh, yes.
And I want to show, and then I'd like for you to tell us a little bit about your memories of Ronnie, the first scene that you and Ronnie shared together.
Anything I
I can do for you?
They told me there was a new lady druggist, so I come by to look at her. Are you her?
Yeah, I'm her.
You're pretty.
Thank you.
Make good faces, too.
I've had a lot of experience. I'm Ellie Walker. What's your name?
Opie Taylor.
Are you any relation to Sheriff Taylor?
He's my paw.
Oh.
Ain't got no more. But I got Aunt B. She takes care of me.
I see. Would you like an ice cream cone?
I'd like one fine. Only I ain't got no money.
I what?
I ain't got no money.
Well, I meant I'd give you one free of charge.
Free? Honest?
On one condition, that you don't say ain't anymore.
Yes'm. Gee, I have never had a free ice cream cone before. I ain't even had a paid one lately.
Well, young man, what you doing over here in the drugstore?
Getting an ice cream cone.
Well, where in the world did you get the money for that?
Didn't need any money, Pa. She's gonna give it to me free just for not saying ain't no more. So I ain't gonna say ain't no more.
Well, I don't blame you.
Here you are.
Thank you.
Certainly is mighty generous of you, Miss Walker.
Oh, well, let's just call it an introductory special, huh?
She's a real nice lady, Pa, ain't she? I mean, isn't she?
She sure is.
Are you married?
No.
My Pa ain't married either. Bye.
He's a nice boy.
Yeah, he does very well. Talks a little too much once in a while.
He was absolutely a sensational child actor. He was a sensational actor. He was so natural and knew all of his lines, knew all of our lines as well. If you ever made a mistake, he could easily correct you. But he wasn't smarty or full of himself or whiny or anything, you know, and he just was wonderful. He was right there on the set and concentrated. Absolutely divine. I loved him.
And I think just the wonderful chemistry that's immediately established in that scene is just wonderful. I wanted to share some comments of Jack about this scene. The ain't and ice cream stuff, Jack Allison writes, was a good way to show what a nice person Ellie was, especially with a child. Since this was her first time on the show, it was important to flesh out her character as quickly as possible. And then I thought this was interesting. Jack included a side note. When someone was correcting Will Rogers once for the use of ain't instead of isn't, Will Rogers' reply was, "I know a lot of folks who say isn't who ain't working." So that was the inspiration for that scene, was that comment by Will Rogers. The very next episode of The Andy Griffith Show was Irresistible Andy, and again, Ellie Walker, Eleanor Donahue, is featured. We're going to pick up where we left off, another wonderful scene between Eleanor and Ronnie Howard.
Hello, Opie.
How do, Miss Ellie?
Are you ready for another ice cream cone?
I got a dime to pay for it.
You have?
My pa says I got to pay for all my ice cream cones and not let you give me no presents.
Why?
My pa says that ice cream you gave me was a down payment on a husband.
He said what?
He said that ice cream you gave me was a down payment on a husband. He said that tain't be.
I see. What else did your pa say to Aunt Bee?
He said a female that would bait a trap with the fellow's own son was a desperate hunter.
Anything else?
That there ain't but one way for the quarry to outfox the hunter.
And what's that?
To put her on the scent of other game.
Oh. Then that's why... Oh!
You a desperate hunter, Miss Ellie?
Not really.
Because I know where you can get yourself a possum.
No thanks, honey. Right now, I'm on the trail of a baboon.
Well,
when you were working with Ronnie, did you just block everything else out? It seemed like I wrote in your book that you just kind of blocked things out, that you could center in so much on what he was giving you.
Oh, yes, yes, because he was so concentrated as an actor, and it was a bit like talking to my own son, because yeah. They were close in age, and well, you do that anyway when you're acting, and you're acting with another, you know, whomever you're talking to, it's that concentrated, but he was fabulous, just fabulous.
And isn't she fabulous with her? Now, we fans of the Andy Griffith Show know what happens next. As soon as Opie leaves, Andy comes in the drugstore. And a lot of these scenes that I picked out take place around that drugstore counter.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what happens when Andy comes in.
I'll get it.
Oh, howdy, Ellie.
Hello, Sheriff, honey. Ellie, baby, is so glad to see your little sheriff, sweetie.
What? No, Ellie, did you know that you got some of our young bucks in town all shook up?
Well, I feel the same way about a certain young fella, too, Sheriff, honey.
Quit, Ellie. it's the truth. I just run into a couple of our young bucks out here, and they couldn't talk about anything but you. Yes,
oh,
they
now,
went on about...
Andy Pye, you know you have nothing to be jealous about. Baby.
Well, I'm not jealous.
Right over here. Ellie's going to fix a nice, cool soda she fixes only for her special favorite sheriff lamb.
No, Ellie, I just come in here to tell you about these boys that you got all shook up. Yeah, boy, they really are shook up. Let me tell you. I mean, you take like good old Franklin Pomeroy. He's a good old buddy, fine boy. Got a big future at the bank and got the cutest little button of a nose. And Pete Johnson, you take good old Pete Johnson, fine, upstanding boy, just dying to settle down with a sweet young thing. And Charlie Beasley, that boy has got the most of the dangest places. Yes, sir, he'd
Sheriff,
make some good.
Little old you believe in long engagements?
Ellie, I'm afraid I got some bad news for you about the church picnic and dance Saturday. Well, I'm afraid I can't go.
Here it is, Sheriff, honey. My special soda for special people I want to show how I feel about.
Ellie. What are you trying to do? Poison me?
I wish I could, you arrogant, conceited, big-headed, two-faced, underhanded...
What?
How dare you think I'd want to marry you? Who do you think you are? Just because I accepted what I thought was a friendly, neighborly invitation. And for your information, Mr. Sheriff, I've given dozens of children free ice cream cones, even if they weren't the children of such gorgeous, charming, desirable catches as yourself. Well, let me tell you something, you big, brave hero. I wouldn't go to the dance with you if you were the last man on earth, let alone marry you. Nor do I need your generous help in getting me an escort. And just to prove it to you, I'm going to go with the first single unattached man who comes through that door. You! Yes. Are you taking anyone to the church dance Saturday?
No.
In that case, I accept your invitation. Thank you.
I just come in here for some foot powder.
Do you remember, was that you actually mixing up that concoction?
I don't think so, no. It was a hand model.
Yeah.
They would do inserts after the production, and that was a hand model. I can tell by their very pretty nails.
But Ellie really gets worked up quick, doesn't she?
Yes.
Did you enjoy that kind of scene? Would you enjoy playing that type of scene?
Sure. Oh, yeah, because it's kind of cathartic. You really, you know, let it all hang out.
Well, we're going to see her let it all hang out one more time.
And we'll have to wait and hear for that. Next episode of the podcast. Hope you guys are enjoying this. I know I certainly am. This is Neil does such a absolutely amazing job doing these interviews. And I appreciate that's Neil Brower doing the interviews. And I want to thank Neil Coleman and Pat Coleman for providing the video. And I went back in and re-edited in the actual video clip so you're able to see them or hear them better if you're listening. I hope you guys are really enjoying the video clips and the audio clips here from the Andy Griffith Show. That was exactly how it was presented there at the cinema, which is now called the Earl. there in Mount Airy, North Carolina at Mayberry Days 2005 for Professor Brower's class. And I'm just so much enjoying this and reliving some of these memories. And I've watched it several times, obviously getting ready for the podcast as I was editing it and everything. And even now, this is probably my third or fourth or fifth time listening, I caught a few things I had not caught before. So you might want to go back and listen to these again. And we got one more week of episodes coming up with this, with the interview with Miss Donahue. And I know you're going to enjoy it as well. So don't miss next week's episode, because you get to hear where she got, riled up. We're going to get to see that as well. So, folks, thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting me. Thank you for being a patron for our Paul Mulick and Rebecca Spears, who are my two patrons. I want to thank them. I want to thank all of you who in the past have supported the show. I've added a new section of the podcast website. If you go to Two Chairs No Waiting and hover over the Two Chairs menu item, you'll see a list of all the episode producers. So I want to thank you all. Love to hear from you. Talk to you guys next week right here on Two Chairs. Good night, everybody.